Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. We're on number 849. Thanks very much for supporting us, listening to us. Over 50,000 of you download us each week, so we're really appreciative. This week, as usual, we have a great guest. This is the second. This is a recurrent theme, if you will. Dr. Indra Sidambi. She is an addiction expert and, in fact, founded New Jersey's first outpatient treatment center for people with alcohol, drugs, of abuse, including narcotics and opiates and benzodiazepines, as well as alcohol and cocaine. She deals with the full range of abuse possibilities at the New Jersey Center for Network Therapy. It actually is an interesting thing to talk about it as an outpatient. We talked last week with her about the acute withdrawal. Let's talk this week with her about chronic and how you keep off it and what the chance of relapse is. Dr. Sidambi, thanks very much for calling in again and letting us borrow your knowledge so that all of us get educated.
Thank you. When I was in very anesthesia, much. Thank you very much for giving me the second opportunity to come on air to discuss more in depth.
Dr. Sidambi, when I was in anesthesia, we used to have a phrase, don't even try it once. These are too powerful. The drugs are too addicting, if you will. That is the fentanyl and the sufentanyl, which we had at that time. Carfentanil was solely a veterinary anesthetic used for elephants and such. But, if you will, where are we now in this process? What's happening with the addiction and the potency of addicting medicines? Is it as potent as always? That is, are people, if you will, do they get addicted with just one dose of something and they're gone for life? Or is that a rare thing now that I'm not in anesthesia and that people aren't taking it IV as their first experience?
Right. It is 20 million Americans 12 years or older are suffering from substance use disorders now. So you can see how common it is right now. And some of those substances, like cocaine, by trying it, one can immediately get addicted to it. But the potency of even the marijuana and heroin that they are buying right now, being laced with fentanyl and carfentanil, which is the anesthetic for animals, can really kill a person. So the potency has risen up, and the mixing of drugs today, the trend of mixing cocaine with alcohol, alcohol with ecstasy or other stimulants have really made it very dangerous. So the whole use of drugs has become a chaos right now in the country. And it's causing
after you get an acute withdrawal, and you've given them medicines that make them, if you will, calmer, or that are sedative hypnotics that give them sleep, what's the next phase? They go home that night.
Correct.
Or a week later after seven nights at home. Uh-huh. Aren't they tempted to shoot up again?
Absolutely. You're right. They want to get high again. But then that's when we are using the therapy that they get during their detoxification. The acute phase of treatment is also, a phase where the therapists come into act and they start working on their triggers, the buildup, and the acting out phase, and really make them see what makes them use. Really find out what are they chasing and be able to involve their family members, the loved ones, to come in and be part of their treatment. So that kind of bridges their needs and their wants. So So that helps the patients to really look at their problem in a real time. And they try to work towards sobriety. We encourage them, and there is quite a bit of therapy that really does help. One of those modalities is cognitive behavioral therapy. And the motivational intervention also really helps them see their denial and their hopelessness that they bring to the table. And once you turn them around and give them hope that you've been sober for 7 days, why do you want to go restart it? Why don't we move forward? And then they do see that there is life without drugs.
Now, one of the things that a center here in Ohio is advocating is giving them something every day that attempts to block the, if you will, the high. It doesn't block the high, but it blocks the craving, they say. If you did that, would that be, if we had that available, it seemed to me that we should give that to everyone, or everyone who we are going to give a painkiller to, because it'll essentially allow them to have pain relief without getting the craving afterwards. Is that a possibility, do you think?
The one thing that we have been doing is medication-assisted treatment. After the acute phase is over and they are in treatment, getting their therapy sessions, people do go on in medication-assisted treatment, which is they take something to block their cravings so that way they have a meaningful engagement in treatment. And they also go to 12-step programs like AA, NA, Alcohol Anonymous Group, and Narcotic Anonymous Groups, and so they can get the support in the community. So that is pretty much helpful. And some of those medication-assisted treatment really block the cravings in a meaningful manner. There are medications for opiates Yes, go ahead.
What's the chance of a relapse? So one of our listeners has emailed me a question, says, what's the chance of relapsing or of getting addicted or of getting another addiction once you withdraw?
Pretty high. Relapse is inevitable. One in three will have a relapse because they might say the relapse is a relapse. Some people would say, my drug of choice is heroin. I did not use heroin, but I have been drinking, so that's not counted as relapse. No, that's still a relapse. So we are talking about total abstinence. So one in three would definitely have a relapse. And that is important to take into account and really have them open up about the relapse and not to hide it. There are four pillars with addiction: lying, instant gratification, manipulation, and negotiation. So when somebody is lying, that means they are leaning on that pillar. And even though they stopped using drugs, these four pillars need to be knocked out. We need to work with their lying, phase of lying, and have them overcome that fear of telling the treater the truth. So that really helps. Once we understand those pillars, we can work magic with addiction.
So they even lie to the person treating them?
Absolutely. They lie to themselves. That's the sad part. Every addict lies to themselves, saying that I am not using so much. I'm not going to be one of those people who overdose and die. I know how to use it safely. That's a lie told to themselves. And also they say to themselves that I'm in pain. That's why I'm taking this medication. I'm not mixing. I'm just doing marijuana. I'm not doing these hard drugs. And the ones who are drinking would say, I'm only drinking. I'm not doing any street drugs like heroin. So I'm better off. So they're lying to themselves. They're minimizing it. They're lying to themselves. That's why, people, there is a myth. People say to addicts, you are selfish. And the sad part is that the addicts are not selfish. They are selfless. They don't care about themselves. And here we are asking them to care about the loved ones. And if you allow me, you shouldn't be using. That that's not possible. They don't love themselves. And they have nothing to give to others.
When you say they don't love themselves, is that that they really do love themselves, but the drugs are too powerful? Or in other words, what I'm trying to get at is we have a lot of normal, what I would call people who seem normal, who get hooked. And when you think about that, you'd say, well, if they're normal, why are they getting hooked? One, and two is, once they get hooked, is it they're hooked and they loved themselves beforehand, but now no, the addiction is just too powerful?
Yes. When they are using these drugs, they have not paid attention to themselves. They become like, they ignore themselves. They're numb. They're totally numb. They used to love themselves. They started doing drugs, and the drugs really make them not care about themselves too. They are in big denial. They are in a hole, you know, continuing to get the next fix, keep getting high. Keep chasing that virgin high that they are used to.
And you said one in three reverts or gets re-addicted or starts using again. How? What time frame? Does that happen in the first week or 2 weeks? Or is it they go for 6 months and then try again? Or what's the usual trigger in that long-term effect?
There is no specific time frame. It can be the very first day when they start having the detox. They go home and they will find something in the house and then they might use it. And then after they use it, how they look at the relapse is very important. You know, some people might not have the strong urge up until they have been clean for a month or so, and then they might have a relapse. And as I told you, like, it can be, you know, if they have a much better support network, it can be after a year or so. So the length of time for anybody to have a relapse is not determined by, you know, what they use and how long has they been using. But it is the opportunity that they get, you know, if they have less of a structured environment at home and if there is a chaos, then they might use drug or alcohol to cope. So it's a coping mechanism for them. Or some might experiment with drugs and alcohol and say, let me see, you know, my doctor told me that taking Suboxone, say, for example, I cannot get high. So I go home and I try to take a pill to see whether this is going to work or not. And the same can hold for naltrexone and drinking. And, you know, a doctor says to the patient, don't take the pill. So
and
they
when
might
they
stop
do
taking
take,
it.
When they say they're on Suboxone and they do take, or they do inject, can they overcome it? Can they take just more and get a high still?
They can. It's a partial antagonist, buprenorphine. So what it does is it has a ceiling effect. So one cannot overdose on Suboxone, but then they can override it by injecting. Yes, they can do that. If they're going to take more, that kind of puts them in a very dangerous state. Yes, they can do that. And as an addict,
and
they
the dangerous
do, they do
state
it.
You mean isn't just danger from, if you will, getting addicted again, but danger of them having a inhibition of their breathing drive. So what narcotics do is they stop their drive to breathe, and
correct. It
they
slows
then,
down
and without a drive to. And without a drive to breathe, they will die, essentially.
They will die. That's the thing, yes. And on top of that, some people would, you know, get too anxious and they want to control their anxiety or they will have withdrawal symptoms. The fear of having withdrawal from opiates, they will take some benzodiazepines, which are also depressant. And so they will kind of add to the opiate slowing down of the system, and it'll slows down the respiratory system, and they would die from not able to breathe. So mixing one drug with the other is not a good choice to make.
Yeah, the whole thing doesn't sound good.
Right, it is.
I want to thank, you and we have been learning from Dr. Indra Sadambi. Dr. Sadambi is the medical director of the Center for Network Therapy, CNT, in New Jersey. It's the first state-licensed ambulatory outpatient detoxification care and treatment facility in New Jersey. She founded it and is now the medical director of it, and works. She's both a psychiatrist and an addiction specialist, and is board certified in those. She's also fluent in five languages, and so I guess you came to the United States from USSR. We should talk about the different psychological states of the various presidents involved, but that's a totally another subject. In any case, I want to thank you for teaching us so much about opiate addiction and about recovery. And the, if you will, the overcoming of it, and of also of helping people do it as an outpatient. You've been listening to podcast 849 of You, the Owner's Manual radio show. We'll be back next Tuesday with a new show, the latest medical news of the week, and another wonderful guest. Thanks for listening, and Dr. Sadambi, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Kevin, thanks again for great engineering.